there's a lot of things to be excited about here. First, this is the second most distant quasar ever discovered. And so that's really exciting because we're pushing the boundaries of what telescopes can find and how far back in time we can go. And more importantly than that, this quasar is massive. It's really massive. It's about 1.5 billion times the mass of the sun. Now, we know about things like that in the more local universe. We know about quasars that are that massive and supermassive black holes that are that massive. But this thing has so much mass so early in time in the universe that it's really breaking a lot of our theories about how these objects form. And so we're left scratching our heads wondering how something could get so big so fast in the early universe. And that's really what's exciting to me.
That was the voice of John O'Meara, chief scientist of the W.M. Keck Observatory, describing his reaction to the discovery of a new object in the distant early universe. Last month, astronomers announced the discovery of the second most distant quasar ever found, using several observatories, including the International Gemini Observatory and Cerro Tololo Inter-American Observatory, programs of the National Science Foundation's MOIR Lab. Not only is this one of the most distant quasars that has ever been identified, but it is also the oldest object of its size ever observed, with a mass of 1.5 billion solar masses, despite being only a few hundred million years younger than the Big Bang itself. Quasars are some of the most extreme objects in the universe, truly enormous black holes, hundreds of millions to billions of times as massive as the sun, power violent accretion disks that glow brighter than most galaxies. But for even a quasar to be this massive, this early in the universe, is remarkable. Based on current theories, the black hole at the center of the quasar would have had to have formed as a supermassive 10,000 solar mass seed black hole about 100 million years after the Big Bang, instead of growing from the smaller black holes that are formed by the collapse of a single star. It formed so early that even the shortest-lived stars would not have had time to form, burn their fuel, and explode to create a stellar black hole. This exceptional quasar was discovered using three telescopes in Hawaii, including the Gemini North Telescope. Because astronomy and the study of the night sky are so important to the native Hawaiian people, whose ancestors sailed thousands of miles on the ocean using the stars as their guides, and to whom the night sky and Mauna Kea are deeply sacred, the Imiloa Astronomy Center, based in Hilo, Hawaii, led an effort to give this quasar a name in the Hawaiian language. This effort was a part of the Ahuahe Inoa Initiative, which brings teachers and students from around the Hawaiian Islands together to create names for new astronomical discoveries made from atop Mauna Kea. This initiative also named Oumuamua, the first interstellar interloper in our solar system, in 2017, and Povehi, the first black hole ever directly imaged, in 2019. Larry Kimura, an associate professor of Hawaiian language at the Kahaka Ula Oke'eli Kolani College of Hawaiian Language, explained in an interview at the Imiloa Astronomy Center why efforts like Ahuahe Inoa are so important today.
I think our involvement with revitalizing our Hawaiian language is a common story throughout the world, especially for indigenous peoples, because our languages have become endangered and become a world crisis. And therefore, we are all trying to do the best we can. And one of the, might be a simple, maybe a small way, however, I think it can lead to bigger things, is to name objects such as what we were doing before in the heavens and get back to that. And that will bring us back to being involved with who we are, what we are, using our language and our cultural perspective on our world.
Kaiu Kimura, executive director of the Imiloa Astronomy Center, described Ahuahe Inoa's value to the Hawaiian community in particular, saying this.
So I think Ahuahe Inoa is a really important program to Kumu, to our students, and to scientists, because it provides a space where everyone can come together and learn from one another, where scientists are able to share their discoveries with students and teachers directly, and where students and teachers who are Hawaiian speaking are able to engage in the scientific process, but in a way that relates and connects back to our language and to very old traditional bodies of knowledge from our Hawaiian perspective. So I think both learn from one another and are able to develop connections between a scientific way of understanding and our very Hawaiian way of understanding.
For the recently discovered quasar, the Ahuahe Inoa workshop team composed the name Poniua Ena. Larry Kimura explains the significance of this name and the importance of the process used to create it.
The name Poniua Ena is fitting mainly because I think it was composed by Hawaiian language immersion or Hawaiian medium teachers. And when I use those words, you know that we are in this process of reconnecting, using our language again in current times. So these are teachers who are teaching young students from kindergarten or preschool all the way up to 12th grade and beyond, in, even into our college. So I know they have experienced something that maybe they never thought they would be engaged in. They're too busy doing so many other things that teachers have to do. But to be able to have this experience that they can share with their students or among themselves. And so this name came out actually as a team effort of our 22 participants this past summer at our Leola Hawaiian Language Teachers Workshop. And I think they thoroughly delved into it, enjoyed it, and was pleasantly surprised that actually their group effort, it wasn't by one or two people, it was a group effort that produced this name, Po, meaning dark, endless, ceaseless power, and new is dizzy, swirling, that creates this brilliance in the sky that is there that we have to go and look through a telescope to see, maybe, I don't know, like we just discovered with Povehi. So that's how this name came about. There was lots of thought. And of course, you can't put everything in. I know I didn't count 12 or 15 letters, but it's, I think, a beautiful name that they created. Thank you.
The full name, Poniua Ena, can be translated as unseen spinning source of creation surrounded with brilliance. The scientists involved in the discovery were equally excited about the new name, finding it as descriptive as it is poetic. John O'Meara had this to say.
I'm really excited about Poniua Ena. It's wonderful to have this synergy between discovery and Hawaiian culture and this traditional naming system. These names are not just names, they're stories behind the object, and that's really wonderful and important. It adds such rich depth to what to some people might just be a bland scientific discovery, and it's not. It's a really exciting scientific discovery, but it's made so much more rich and whole by having this cultural backdrop behind it.
Jason Chu, a science fellow at Gemini Observatory, agreed.
By using these Hawaiian names, we honor both the culture as well as the scientific achievements that we've been able to do. And especially Hawaiian language is important because a major part of the discovery was actually done on Mauna Kea. And so it was important that we honor its contribution to science overall, for humanity overall.
With discoveries like Poniua Ena, it is important to remember that there are always many unique and essential parts contributing to the whole. No one culture, observatory, or scientist could have done this on their own. John O'Meara put it better than I could when he said,
"This discovery is important because it's really a celebration of Mauna Kea. Not one, but three telescopes contributed to this discovery, Keck, Ukurt, and Gemini. And so it highlights the importance of Mauna Kea to astronomy. But it also highlights the importance of sharing the sky. It highlights the importance of sharing ways of knowing and evolving those ways of knowing together. And I think that's really the most important part of this."
Expanding on this strategic and meaningful aspect of this discovery, Jason Chu explained,
Yeah, so I think it's important to emphasize here that a lot of these discoveries actually rely on multiple different telescopes, and each of these telescopes has a different, slightly different capability that makes it strongly suited to observe in a certain way than others. And so it's very important that we have a lot of these different telescopes collaborating together, especially within our parent organization, NSF's NORLAB, where we have telescopes in South America as well as here in Hawaii, which can see this object at, you know, both at the same time. And so by collaborating together, they can get complementary data that can make the result even more interesting.
And it's not just other traditional observatories that can make the result more interesting and teach us more about Pōnia-Ena. Neutrino detectors and cosmic ray observatories can also be used to observe quasars like this one. And if we could detect multi-messenger signals like these from such an ancient, distant quasar, it could help explain how a black hole could grow to be so massive so early in the universe. The discovery of Pōnia-Ena is already raising questions about the earliest epochs of our universe. Further study of the ancient quasar and others like it can only serve to answer those questions and inspire more. Thank you for listening to the GEMMA Podcast, Episode 10. I've been your host, Odysseus Quarles, a GEMMA intern. The GEMMA program stands for Gemini in the Era of Multi-Messenger Astronomy and is funded by a multi-million-dollar award from the National Science Foundation in order to advance the leadership role of Gemini Observatory in this new era of multi-messenger astronomy. GEMMA has been designed to maximize synergies with the transformative facilities that are coming online in the near future, such as the Vera C. Rubin Observatory, or ones that are already active, like LIGO, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. The projects within GEMMA focus specifically on high-resolution time domain astronomy and outreach. I'd like to take a moment to thank the Imiloa Astronomy Center for allowing us to use audio from their interviews with Jason Chu, Kaiu Kimura, Larry Kimura, and John O'Meara, and for leading the Ahuahe Inoa program to unite cultural leaders, astronomers, and students to share traditional knowledge with modern astronomical research. As we come to the end of Season 2 of the GEMMA Podcast, I'd like to make some acknowledgments of thanks. Thank you to the National Science Foundation for making the GEMMA program possible. Thank you to the International Gemini Observatory, a program of the National Science Foundation's NOIR Lab, for hosting GEMMA. Thank you to Chance Spencer for starting the GEMMA podcast. Thank you to all of our guests, Thomas Sekul, Michal Drahos, Dr. Jacqueline Keane, Ethan Siegel, Joshua Chamet, Chris Simpson, Dr. Brian Day, and Dr. Michael Wong. And thank you to you, our audience. It's been a pleasure sharing our journeys in multi-messenger astronomy with you, and we hope to see you again soon.